Welcome back to the Menopause Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Gordon, and today we are joined by Demi Stevens. Dr. Demi Stevens is the CEO of Year of the Book Press. She turns writing dreams into successfully published books. She has personally assisted in the production of 350 titles by more than 125 authors, ranging from children's picture books to sizzling romance, award-winning mysteries, and best-selling business books. She holds degrees from West Virginia University, Capital Northwestern, and Ohio State, and has served on the faculties of Ohio State and Delaware Valley University, and as director of Paul Smith Library. Many clients call Demi the book whisperer, but perhaps book midwife is more appropriate because literary labor and delivery can be so painful. Each year, she coaches a limited number of writers one-on-one through the entire drafting, editing, and publishing process. I have personally published two books with Demi, and I'm working on a third that we discuss in the podcast. During the interview, we discuss the origin of Year of the Book Press, her initial 65% success rate of turning interested budding authors into published authors, why it's important to have skin in the game, being a recovering perfectionist, removing obstacles, remembering all you can about a scene when you're writing, the inception of ideas and where they come from, imposter syndrome, permission, bringing back an old skill, and how words have power. Now, at the end of the episode, make sure you visit drmichellegordon.com/podcasts. Don't forget the S, where you can find the show notes, plus the links to the books and resources mentioned in the episode. If you enjoy the episode, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you're always the first to know when each episode is released. And thank you for all of the 5-star reviews. I appreciate that. Now, if you have any questions about the topics covered in this or any other podcast, I invite you to open a conversation with me on Instagram at Dr. Michelle Gordon. That's DrMichelleGordon. Or you can send me an email to Dr. Gordon. That's DrGordon, GORDON, at menopausemovement.com. I promise I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Now, let's go to the interview with Demi. Thanks so much for being a part of the Menopause Movement. And how do you like the new studio?
I just need to put up my digs. I love it.
Yeah. It's good to see you again. So Demi, let's start with, I don't know, you know, this is the Menopause Movement podcast, right? So let's start with, like, if you have a menopause experience, let's start with that first.
Well, actually, mine has been a little different than my friends, who will be sitting around a table talking about our books, and they'll start shedding layers. And I know it's not because my heat kicked on. For me, I'm finally dressing like other people have dressed. Instead of being in 3 layers of sweaters, I just wear one now.
Okay.
For the first time for me, I'm not freezing cold all the time. But it is occasional where my husband will just, he'll come up and give me a hug and he's like, "Ooh, you're sweaty." And I'm like, that would be a hot flash, honey.
Yeah. All right. So Demi, why don't you just give us a little bit of your background, like what you do and how you help people and maybe why what you do is relevant to women in menopause.
Golly, thanks. Yeah. I was a librarian for about a decade, and one of my favorite things about the job was that I got to create programming for our community. And when a lot of people think about public libraries, the first thing that programming pops to mind is early childhood education. This is where you bring your toddler, your child, your grandchild for story time. And I thought that people over 4 feet tall might still want to learn something. So I had sat down and made a list of a really long list of things I still wanted to learn in this life. And lo and behold, they were all topics that someone was an expert in, local to me. And so I just would reach out to them and say, "Hey, would you give us an hour on Thursday evening? Or would you come teach us to play Mahjong Tuesday mornings or you know, Wednesday afternoons or whatnot?" And so these great programs got underway and people loved it. And one night in August 2012, on my day off, in the evening in the city where there was no good parking. I got called into a mandatory meeting. So this had a lot going for it, right, leading up to this event here. And in that 45-minute meeting, a man who led the program changed my life. He looked out at the room and asked us all, "Have you ever thought about writing a book?" And I said, "Man, that wasn't on my list, but it should be because I do want to write a book. Me, 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 pick me." And so I went back to work the next day and researched what he had told us about a division of Amazon at that time that was fairly new. And I looked into it and discovered, wow, all that he said about being able to get a professionally printed and bound copy of your book and have it listed for sale for less than $5 was true. And that was a price point anyone in my service community could reach. And it sort of set me on fire. I was a little introvert before that, and I hardly spoke to anybody, let alone strangers.
Sure.
And so I just started reaching out to people. I talked to Dave at the post office and said, "Hey, have you ever thought about writing a book?" And Dave did one of these, like, look around. "We're in the post office. Do you think I have a story or two?" "Oh, yeah, okay, sure." Talk to my card club, talk to people at the grocery store. It was nuts. It was very undie-me-like at that point. And I said, "Well, let me start a program here." And I put together a list of all the topics that I thought someone who might want to write a book would need to learn. And it turns out there were quite a few. So I had like 25, 26 items in the list. Gosh, how often are we going to meet? And every other week. Okay, well, that would be like a year. So let's call this Year of the Book. Plus, I love to eat Chinese food, and it felt like one of those spots waiting to happen on the placemat in the Chinese New Year. We'll have Year of the Book. And I thought maybe there would be one or two crack jobs out there willing to play along on this because it was such a huge commitment. And I was really overwhelmed when at the organizational meeting, there were 57 people. And not the one or two that I predicted. And half of the room had a ream high of paper that they'd gone and pulled their manuscript out of that bottom drawer in the guest room, blew the dust off, and had that there in front of me. And I would say out of the 57 people, there were probably 48 of them were women. And of those 48, almost all of them were menopause age.
Really?
There were five or six that were older than menopause age. But that was the point in life where women said, "I have this goal. There's this dream I put on hold. And now that somebody's invited me to it, I can picture embracing it again."
So how many of those books in that 57 group, you know, the original group of 57 people, how many of those actually published a book with you?
Wow. Well, I dangled this carrot at the beginning of the year. And I said, if you have the chutzpah to pull it together and get a finished tangible product that we can market, I would create the launch gala that would put that out there for the universe. And so enough of them bid in. I thought, I think the industry average completion rate for courses like this is something crazy, like 1 or 2%.
It's about three.
Three. We had 37 people finish their book in that first
That's
year.
That's great.
And 25 of them were available on the same date to have a launch party. If you've ever thrown a party, there's so many things. We had to plan it on a Ravens bye day because we're very close to Baltimore and the football season had to be taken into account.
Sure.
Yeah. So that was huge. And then that led me on to offering this as an ongoing service. So many of those authors said they didn't want to lose this at the end of that first year.
Yeah, I'm just trying to get a percentage here. So 37 of 57. So you had a 65% completion rate. That's really
65
high.
Is a good number. It's a good 64. Age.
64.9, but
it's a, I like that. Always looking forward.
Yeah. Well, that's really good. So this was the first thing. And when you had, what did you just like meet in a monthly group or a weekly group or?
My intent was that we would meet every other week at the library in a small group in our conference room. And what we learned in that first meeting was that the conference room wasn't the right size. And so we had to move bookcases in the children's area. So it wasn't going to be any sort of small group at all. And what we wound up doing was dividing into three groups. So that time allotment that I gave it as part of my job was like Shamu just jumped out of the water, and it wound up taking on several evenings a week, and I had to do it outside of work hours at the end of the day.
Did you charge this first group for your time?
That first year was completely free, which is another thing that stands in the way of completion, right? Having skin in the game often helps us really commit to those goals that we want to do. So I was super impressed.
One of my mentors likes to say, you know, you say skin in the game. He likes to say that the transformation begins at the transaction.
There's that.
You know, and that until you commit, like, you know, we have the Menopause Movement membership. You've looked at that a little bit.
Yeah.
And we've got the Meno System, which is our transformational 8-week program. And until you commit to actually put some money down to like take over your life or say, I want what this thing can offer me, it's really hard to take any action, because what the goal looks like is something super abstract. But once you actually start with a transaction, once you give somebody some money, then there's this, you know, oh, I've spent money for this, so I have to follow through.
So here's the guilt that hits me. I just got off the phone with another author friend who has written several books. She has no problem writing books, but she just hit this wall on one, and she couldn't quite get past 20,000 words. And she knew she wanted it to be at least 50, if not 60 or 70,000 words. And she just wasn't doing it. So she said, I did something. I would never do this. I hired a book coach, and I was able to talk her into a price I could afford. And then I showed up to the first coaching call, but I'd already written 45,000 new words before the coaching call.
It's exactly right, though, because she made a commitment and she found her muse through, you know, making a commitment. I mean, that's, you know, oftentimes just the transformation really does start as soon as we lay down the money. And I've seen this over and over in my own life as I've purchased courses and trying to build my own business. And, you know, the implementation isn't so much based on how much money I spend, but on my own dedication to what those goals are.
It's absolutely true. Did I need the coach to do this? Yeah, I kind of did. Because without that, I didn't put enough of my own belief in myself before that, until I had that external knowing someone else was going to believe in me right alongside.
Right. Well, so you help women and men write books.
Mostly women.
Mostly women. You work with women. You work with people one-on-one. You don't have a scalable sort of thing. You just work with, I mean, I don't know. You may think it's, I'm not trying to be judgmental, but you don't have like a course that for the masses. You really do a one-on-one sort of.
My favorite is to be able to really be uniquely close with an author or a person who would like to view themselves as a someday author. What we found in that very first year of the book is that, let's say the first 116 times that you share your words with someone else, it is terrifying.
It is.
And it makes you vulnerable. And that's where, for me, that's that place I love to be in with someone where they've honored me by sharing their words, because it can be just scary to know that someone else is reading your story. But then I want that experience to be beautiful for the person. I don't want them to feel like the other person missed the point of what they were writing or didn't notice that it was scary. This is where I've seen book groups, writers groups specifically, go sideways. A lot of well-intentioned, beautiful young writers, and I mean young in the sense that they haven't been writing for long, come together. And all of a sudden, they're thrown into this group where they're supposed to critique other people's writing. But writing is new to begin with. So I wasn't an editor before this, but now you're asking me to find things that are wrong in someone else's work. And well, darn it, I'm trying to find something that's wrong, and I'm going to point out anything that I can find that's wrong, because that's the way you're going to make me feel like I'm being helpful. And wow, the last thing that we need to know is a new young writer is everything that's wrong.
Well, I mean, it's just like everything else. I mean, you know, you get better at something the more you do it, and the faster that you can fail forward, the better it's going to be for you.
I'm such a recovering perfectionist. Oh my God.
It's true. It's true. And what I find, I mean, I've published two books with you. Right. We have the menopause movement, recipes for living. And then we also have the ultimate menopause guide. And then we're in the process of working on the memoir, but it's super, super hard for me because it's so raw and real.
And those are the stories that are most worth sharing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Other people in that tunnel and you can show them the way out.
Right. And so, yeah, so we've been working on that memoir now for about 18 months, maybe a little longer.
We're birthing an elephant. The gestation period is longer than the mere mortals.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And it's funny because getting the words out wasn't so hard. It was like a big, catharsis in terms of like me writing my story. And if you follow the podcast, you've heard, like when I interviewed Deirdre Fay and when I interviewed Stephanie Davis, you've heard a lot about my own trauma background. And Nikki Sturgis, we talked about trauma. And so in my memoir, I'm talking about all this trauma. And so I would have a moment when I was first birthing this book where I would just be able to sit, or I would try to write something every day and send it to Dimi. And it was super disjointed and there was no like unifying theme at all. It was just like all these disjointed, horrible stories of trauma and heartache and angst and just really. And so I would get these emails back from you that would say things like, "You didn't deserve to be gaslit like that."
It's such a shock, right?
or you know, it's too bad your grandfather was so rapey. And
I remember writing that.
And it's like, well, you know, these are the stories. These are like the real life stories that I lived as a child. And they're just so traumatic and horrible, but it's so fun to be able to talk about them and laugh.
First, we have to get through it. We have to vomit it out. And it's like an illness, you know, once you're able to get through the, you feel better almost immediately, don't you?
Yeah, it's true because I vomited out. It's like writing ish and not, I don't mean ish in the sense that it's, you know, the word for poop, but I mean, just kind of like not real writing. It's just like stuff coming out. Well, and so now I'm in this other phase where I'm looking at structure and I'm looking for unifying themes and I'm trying to build something that kind of goes to a climax.
So here's the thing, Michelle. Our books, our best books, and our lives can be either a romance and a happy ending or a tragedy. We've got that in there. It's just the matter of where you start to tell the story and when you stop.
Right. Yeah.
and then the story you keep repeating to yourself.
Right. I mean, well, everything. I mean, what's really interesting about discovering story structure in the true sense of the word, and that's, you know, beyond hero's journey, but really story structure, is that story is such a fundamental part. It's a part of our programming. Mm. And without story, we have no meaning. We don't understand our world without story. And what I've discovered over the last, I know it's been a while since we've had a good talk, but I've discovered that everything in my life is a story. And it's a story that either serves me or it's a story that doesn't serve me. And if it doesn't serve me, then I can change it.
I find it interesting that some people will have very, very intense memories of early childhood, and other people can't remember anything until they're late teen years. And I wonder why that is. And it's buried in story somewhere. For me and one of my friends, at least, most of the stories that we remember from our childhood are because someone else showed us a picture of an event that happened when we were young and told us a story about it. And so that storytelling, sometimes we wind up taking on other people's stories and regurgitating them as our own.
Yeah.
And maybe that wasn't the case at all. So I'm always curious as to how these stories get started and then how they pass along and how we allow ourselves to hear them.
Yeah, what we've discovered in brain science is actually that our memories are super faulty. And the only time, I mean, if you're, you know, especially when you're trying to do, when you're trying to do behavior change, you know, the best time to record an incident is like right at that time, so that you can look at antecedents, behaviors, and consequences. And when it comes to memory and story, and in terms of like literary story, let's say you're trying to write some sort of autobiographical snippet or whatever, it's okay to, you know, be, it doesn't have to be exactly chronological, and it doesn't have to be exactly all the events, because it's, you know, you can take some literary, you know, poetic license, as it were, you know, like the Maya Angelou autobiographies are all, you know, they're filled with, I'm sure, a lot of myth, right?
Part of the trick is that we have to also fulfill our readers' expectations, and they have a certain standard that the book, the story is going to last this long, and it's going to have this many high points and this many low points, and one is going to follow each other in this manner. Here's low, 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 high, low, 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 low. And so in order to engineer that through our own tales, we're combining certain elements as if they happen together in order to convey the story in a way that it can be heard. Because if your listener isn't listening or isn't able to hear it the way you're speaking, God knows we've zoned out on a few conversations when that happens.
Yeah, that's true. Well, in reading, I've been studying about autobiography, as I had mentioned to you before, and there is a book called Growing Up, and I think it won the Pulitzer Prize. But when he wrote his first draft, after 20 pages in, when he started reading it himself, he fell down. He like fell asleep. He's like, this is awful. Because what he did was he just made like a chronology of his life. And so instead, what he wrote about was the struggle between his overpowering mother and him learning how to be himself. And that's actually the example that's in the book that I'm reading. But it's really interesting to see, because I'm looking for themes like that in my own story, so to make it interesting and not just be some sort of shock value about all the trauma that I've overcome.
Sometimes we're able to see the themes in our own life, but I think for most of us, most of the time, we have to put it out there first in order to hear our own words coming back to us.
Sure.
And the themes just light up at that point. Like, it wasn't obvious before that I attract gay men. Oh, okay. But when I look back at the prom date, and when I look back at a lot of relationships, oh, okay, now I see the theme.
So you fall in love with gay men.
I do.
Oh, that's so funny. But that, best, you know, I mean, that's okay. Best friends, right?
Best friends.
Yeah, that's awesome. So in terms of, like, let's say that, you know, one of the things that happens for these women, for all of us who go through menopause, all of us, not just these women, but, you know, women who are going through menopause and find it very disruptive, because not everyone does. Let's be honest. If you follow my podcast and you follow my Facebook lives or any of my work, you know, we talk about the disruptive part of menopause, because for me it was super disruptive, and I'm trying to help others. So the thing is that often, you know, just recently I had, you know, we, in the podcast, we had a photographer come on and talk to us about photography, because we need hobbies when faced with not having kids in the house anymore, or, you know, looking at meaning for ourselves, we need hobbies. And one of those hobbies could be writing a book. And
you're a fantastic photographer. So these all start to come together. No wonder the cookbook came together.
Yeah. So the question I have for you is, if somebody feels that they're pregnant with a book, that they're ready to tell a story, whether it be, you know, a travel story or a autobiographical story, or you know, even just a fiction or a self-help book or something, how would you recommend that somebody get started to just kind of get something going?
I love taking away as many obstacles as possible. So I'm a big fan of sitting down right in that moment when the muse has shown up and said, this is a thing and I want you to write this story and I want you to focus on yourself. So I'm a big, big fan of pulling out a notebook or the laptop or whatever is handy, sidewalk chalk if necessary, but do it before the rain. Just get the ideas
so you can
out
take a picture.
There. Take a picture. Yes, you can Instagram the outline of your story in sidewalk chalk. That's probably going to shoot the book straight to the top of the charts instantly.
Oh, for sure.
You'll have to write every chapter and then have it transcribed because your fans will expect this of you after the first.
So funny.
Yeah. Just get those first ideas down. And it comes different for different people. For some folks, they need a bullet point list and that's enough. I want to say, okay, I want to make sure and include the scene, grandma and baking cookies together. That was really important to me. Or I really need to get out this trauma moment where I was in a car accident and it was just awful. Or this abuse instance. I need to talk about this scene. Make a bullet point list of all the things that you think have to be in there. And then you can simply pick a list, pick an item from the list each time you're ready to sit down. And as clearly as you can, take yourself back to that moment and ask yourself, okay, what room was I in? What place? Where was I in the country, in the state, in the city, in the town, in the mountains? What was the weather like? What time of year was it? And try to capture those scene details so that as you're writing, you're using all five of your senses and you're just pouring out everything that you can remember about those instances. And it makes it real. It's a bit like what a hypnotherapist might do to try and take you back to that. You're imagining the people that you were with, the place you were in, the color of the wallpaper, or the smells in the air, and going into that moment and just purge it all out and don't read a word of it. That's my best advice. Do not go back and read a word of it. It's like you've lived through it. Now you've written about it and let it go and then write the next item. Keep going until you feel like you've dumped all of those elements out. And then you can sit and see, oh, you know what? I attract gay men. That's what it was all this time. I see it here and here. And those themes do come out to us. It's our subconscious rising up and saying, here's what was important. But I think we have to get through the clutter and what our brain would normally feed to us because we have I have certain expectations of myself. This is all I'm capable of. I'm great. I could take care of other people. Da, da, da. And now we have to spend time with ourselves, I think, to get to know us better.
Right. I mean, I think that, writing, at least for me, in writing the memoir that I'm working on has been, I've had to really look deep into my own pain. Mm-hmm. And that has fueled some really great bits of writing. It's not a whole work yet, but a few bits of writing. And then in terms of remembering scenes, the thing that I remember the most is, talking about the scales of a fish glinting in the sun.
Oh, what a beautiful image.
As we're cleaning the fish, and so the guts are going down the sink. But so scales of fish.
Now you can see it. You could see the rainbow that was there all this time. I was just listening to a podcast earlier today. Oprah was interviewing someone named Bishop Jakes. I hadn't followed him before, but he talked about our potential as an apple. And he said, I want you to imagine this apple is here and you're holding an orchard. And this is you. You have the potential to be this orchard. But the thing is, that potential, it's not in the peeling. It's not in the meat of the apple. You can cut to get to your orchard, or you can rot to get to it. But it's those seeds that are what is going to really launch you there. And that was a powerful moment to me. I'm like, okay, yes, there have been times that I've cut and it felt like the pain.
Yeah.
But I had to go through that to get to the good stuff. And I'd much rather do it that way than the rotting way. I'm not That's all true. About waiting to the deathbed moment.
No. Right. Well, it's not just the deathbed moment, but when we have stories inside of us that we refuse to acknowledge, things that come back and plague us, but we try to push away, you know, those are the things that can really rot us from the inside, you know, things, you know, whatever.
They're chewing, but it's at such a slow rate.
Yeah.
That pain lasts so long.
That's true. Yeah. So in terms of seeing details, and do you have any, I'm just trying to, any, because if somebody's not really a writer and hasn't practiced as a writer and they're just, you know, getting started, what kind of, is there something to read, you think? Like, is there an author that you really like how they describe?
Well, read, and write are the ongoing morals of the story here. Since each person is so different in what they love to read, I'm all about finding something that you already enjoy. For me as a writer, one of my inspirations was a book by Natalie Goldberg called Writing Down the Bones. And this is such beautiful text. It's a series of short essays, but it very much inspired me to let go and start writing. I felt like at the end of every short chapter, I was ready to write. It was almost like a brief meditation.
Yeah.
And I could take her idea or her talking about a way that she got started writing a certain element in her life. And then that opened it up for me. It was almost like somebody was whispering in my ear for a little bit. And then I just had to start transcribing. And then into my own story. It works differently for every person. Every person is a new writer. So find the books that you love. And if you can have that moment of the on-off switch here where you're reading, but then you're also looking without being immersed in the story to start to see what sorts of elements that person is using, this can be very challenging. The first person that taught me how to do it was actually a psychotherapist, and she used colored markers, and she would take her sheet of the book, and she would color setting in green to color internal thoughts in one color. She colored dialogue in blue, and to make sure that there was a balance there. For me, I think all of that is second and third draft kind of thinking. What most people need in early beginning is just permission to take the time to sit down and tell the story. Someone once shared it to me that when I said, well, it felt too selfish for me to sit down and write my book because there's so many other people that needed help writing their books. They're like, oh, you're the one being selfish because we need the help getting to our best content, but we need your guidance to get there. Yours is the voice we want to hear.
Right.
And for our audience today, theirs is the voice that we need to hear. And until we can think of it as a selfless act to take the time to pour those thoughts out, to look for those themes, to let them percolate up, that's really when we finally cease being selfish and we allow other people to truly benefit all that we've learned, all that we have to offer.
I mean, you were talking before about fear, and I know that
it's huge.
One of the things that's kept me from probably completing this memoir is the fear of false intimacy.
Oh, wow.
Because with as raw and real as I am, and talking about all of my childhood trauma and all of the trauma, I mean, because my life has been one trauma after another, as you know, because you've read my raw, awful work.
Awful, stop that.
the thing that I really worry about, and this is probably completely unfounded, but I really worry about people, you know, that it gets really big and people, you know, I'm afraid of success. Mm-hmm. So these are mm-hmm. all real fears.
Absolutely.
And that people, because they read my book, will think they know me. And then they'll be able to come over and say, well, you know, I did this. It's completely unfounded. This is just my own inner dialogue saying, you know, well, you should do it. No, you shouldn't. You shouldn't. You know, that it is.
And, you know. Oh gosh, what you're saying resonates so strongly with me. When people will ask me what the writing journey looks like, and I'll say it looks an awful lot like a 12-step process. And the thing that sucks is that usually step two or step three is this fear, this overwhelming fear that I'm going to say something and I'm never going to be able to take it back. And yeah. then like step 10 and step 11 are pretty much the same freaking fear, but in reverse, like, no, I'm not going to release it. No, you know, it's all done now, yeah. but no.
And then there's this idea that I won't have any other story to tell after that. If I tell this story now, where am I going to get any further stories from? And so it's like so dumb.
Elizabeth Gilbert, when she wrote Eat, Pray, Love, it was this massive hit, right? And yeah. she's written how many memoirs since then?
Yeah, she's done a lot of memoir, and she's done some. And she's yeah, and as a matter of fact, I was going to bring up her book, Big Magic.
I love this one.
Because I wanted to talk to you about ideas. I was going to bring that up. But just before I do that, let's go back to Elizabeth Gilbert and Eat, Pray, Love. And she's not only been a writer for her whole life and always worked on the craft and just wrote about, I mean, in Big Magic, she talks about this. She says, you know, I would go to the marina and write about sailboats because yeah. I was being true to the craft. But she's also written fiction.
Yes.
You know, she's just a writer. But one of the things she talks about in this book, Big Magic, is how ideas come and how ideas will come from the universe. They come from the ether.
And she talks about the muse coming to visit you. And the muse will give you this fantastic idea and you'll have it and you'll recognize it's fantastic. And I need to write this and this is amazing. It's absolutely wonderful. But if you take no action, the muse will take the idea and bring it to someone else who's willing to put it into action, bring it to life.
And she talks about how she had a story about the Amazon and mm-hmm. that story of the Amazon transferred to her other friend who actually ended up writing and publishing the story in a kiss.
And it felt just like, oh, that was the book I was meaning to write.
Yeah. I mean, she had started it and then The point I'm trying to make is that if you have an idea, if you are, you know, obviously my audience is primarily women. So if you're a woman who wants to write a book and you have this idea, if you don't take any action, you are not only are you going to lose out, but all of your audience is going to lose out. Anybody Absolutely. Who was supposed to hear that, because they need to hear this information.
I'm not going to let you off the hook by saying someone else is going to come along and write your perfect book, because I don't believe that's true. I think there's a unique spin that each woman will bring to that story that no one else has lived the same way.
Yeah, that's actually true. And so we know about ideas, and you talked about Natalie Goldberg. Let's just go back to this idea of permission for 1 second, because we live in a patriarchy. We live in a patriarchy. And I read this book called The Alphabet Versus the Goddess.
Okay.
And I talk about it quite a bit because it's really the history of religion. It's the history of a religion, but it's also the history of how, with written language, the goddesses were killed and gods became male, because we're using the other side of our brain because of written language. It's a beautiful book. It's a historical, you know, it's basically religious history. And with the advent of Christianity and Islam, you know, more and more misogyny happened, but it was misogyny from written language. So it's very interesting, this book. And I talk about it quite a bit because it sheds some light on the fact that we live in a patriarchy. And because we live in a patriarchy, if you look back at even the ads from the 50s, right? I mean, mm-hmm. even in America. So I have a pretty big audience in the UK. So I don't know what the history is in the UK, but in America, women could not get a credit card until the late 70s, maybe not even the 1980s. And I remember when my mom in the 1970s, my parents were divorced and my mom wanted to get a car and my dad had to go with her.
Wow.
She was divorced. And so I bring this up because as women in America, for sure, I don't know about the rest, but probably most, you know, Western countries, we are told to ask for permission.
We're the ones holding the key at this point. We're the ones who've locked ourselves up by now. It may be that it's a reflection of this patriarchy of which you speak, but it also may be that we bought into it at some point.
And I wouldn't say we don't buy into it. I mean, it took me a long time to kind of unlearn the truths that I was taught about a woman's place.
In terms of taking time for my own goals, I was absolutely the one that was holding me back. It's occurred to me now several times over the last 7 years. First with writing, I would say to my husband, "Oh, I found this great resource. Okay, and I just need you to sign off on this. It says, I, Demi Stemmes, am going to commit to writing at least 30 minutes a day. I'm going to make my book my absolute priority this year, blah, 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 blah. And I'm signing this, and I want you to sign and acknowledge that I'm going to take the time." Do you realize how ridiculous this is, right? But so I'm going to my husband and I'm like, okay, and I'll put a little sign on the door that isn't working. He's like, so just write.
why do you need my permission?
Why do you need my permission to write?
Yeah. Right.
Oh, okay. And then you were using a good
technique though called the self-contract. And the self-contract is really important. The main thing though is it's a self-contract, not a contract with your husband. And a permission. Yeah, yeah. Yes. And a permission from him.
But, you know, wow, it was so informative to have that reaction from him. Like, why do you need me?
Yeah, no, that's great.
Or was it stealing your time? I'll just play this video game a little while longer.
But it's true because we tend to be the rate limiting step when it comes to our goals, right? We get in our
over
way
and over.
Over and over and over. And how do you change that? You know, I'm working through in the Menopause Movement membership, we're working through behavior change and the actual steps to behavior change.
Building habits. It's something we thought we should know a long time ago.
Keeping records. But when you know, because you have to plan for failure, you know, there's going to be times when you say, I'm going to exercise today. And then like yesterday for me, I just procrastinated until 9 p.m. I'm like, it's too late now. Mm-hmm. so I didn't do it. But I got up today and did it the first thing.
Good for you.
Yeah. But so the point I guess I'm trying to make is that we've got to make friends with the woman inside our heads, the bitch who tells us we suck. Mm. And we have to make friends with that roommate because the roommate is crazy. The roommate takes both sides. The roommates will tell you, yes, you can do it. No, you can't. What are you thinking? Who are you? Blah, blah, blah. I mean,
if you love me, you would do this.
It's crazy. And so we have to make sense of that. And we also have to start to realize that that's not who we are. That voice is not us. That voice is just our mind.
Oh, if only we could date ourselves and try to figure out from the outside in what would make this woman happy. You'd think we'd have more insight into the answer to this. But
yeah, yeah.
Maybe not. You
know, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, one thing that I find is so great about writing is that it can be so reflective. And you know, journaling is a different story than it's a different thing than writing a story, you know, like your lady who was the golfer, right? Mm. So it's just, I wonder how, I mean, I write, but I don't call myself a writer, you know, and I've published a couple of books, but I don't call myself an author.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is Dr. Michelle limiting herself.
Yeah. Maybe it is. Maybe it is, you know, I just wonder how many other women struggle with this same sort of dichotomy.
I'm told that many famous authors, including you know someone like Sue Grafton, who has written the entire alphabet of fiction, still wakes up and wonders when this book comes out, are they finally going to figure out that I'm a fraud? So I don't think that there is a solution to this problem. There's just an embracing. There's a willingness to, okay, I feel the fear. I'm going to feel the fear anyway, but today I'm going to go ahead and do this in spite of the fear.
Yeah. I think nothing good comes out of staying comfortable. We have to do things that hurt and are scary and push us outside of the box. And put us out there. I mean, I at least for me, I have to do that, because if I don't, then I'm feeling like I'm going to be stuck.
I feel absolutely alive in those moments when I say I'm going to do something, and then like the nausea hits. It's when I've made myself publicly accounted, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And there's that, oh, moment. Oh, oh.
Yeah. You know, so here's a good example of that. We've got a live event in Manchester, UK, April 25th of 2020. Woo! So by the time this podcast airs, that you'll be able to go to the website to buy tickets for that event in Manchester. And it's the Menopause Movement Live. And I am terrified of that. I've never done a live event. I don't even know what possessed me to say, okay, I'm just going to go for it and do this. And, you know, so I'm going to get together a bunch of women and talk about menopause and talk about community, and we'll see. But I'm, you know, just thinking about it, like my stomach is, you know, I'm like, I want to throw up. But it's the right thing to do. I just know, because I'm so afraid of it, that if I don't push forward to that, I'm going to feel like I'm stuck. And then, you know, we also have this whole, you know, imposter syndrome. I mean, I remember when I first started my surgical practice and I was like, are they going to find out that I don't know what I'm doing?
You know, is my first patient going to come in and be armed with all the seasons of Quincy MD? And yeah. Like, they know more than me.
It's true. I mean, it's worse now than it used to be, but yeah, you know, I used to think that I was like, not a good surgeon, or that, you know, and then I started to realize that I wasn't, you know, killing people, and I know that's so extreme and so awful, but you know, the worst surgeons, you know, you hear these stories of bad surgeons who, you know, take advantage of people or kill people, or, you know, and then the system will keep pushing them and making, you know, making excuses for them. There's a story of a neurosurgeon who, you know, made it through residency but wasn't competent, and he still got out and was caught maiming people and stuff. And so when compared to that, I'm like, oh, I'm really, really up here.
Writing seems so good all of a sudden, because I'm not supposed to be right on the first draft. Whereas, let's say brain surgery, you really need to get that right.
Yeah. You can't mess up in surgery. And at least, you know, one thing that's true, and that's why we have residencies, you know, because you have somebody who's experienced there who can fix anything that a resident, most anything that a resident will break. And it's really rare to have a bad complication in a teaching hospital. I'll put that out there, to go back to the surgery analogy. But when you're birthing something from nothing, there's going to be a lot of mistakes, and that's okay.
I think you have to accept it and move forward. There, you will have a second and a third and a fourth live event. And this is where you can keep the training wheels on if you want. I'm totally rooting for you on this one, because the only thing that's going to make your second and third live events even better is what you learn from this first one. Probably, I'm guessing, because just based on what happened with my first year of the book, probably it's the people that you'll meet in that first event that are going to have a profound impact on how the birth of the second, third, and fourth live events.
Well, yeah, that's true. Because up. I have to say that, you know, the Minnowmates, who, you know, that's what they call themselves, the women who've gone through the Minnow system and are in the membership, and they're the Minnowmates, and they've learned the Minnowmate way of eating, and the Minnowmate way of exercising, and the Minnowmate way of thinking. They have profoundly impacted my life to this point. Mm-hmm. And it's still a small group, but we're looking to grow and get more people in. And we're super excited about what the future is going to hold, because we want to impact more and more people, you know, as many as we can. And so we're allowing, you know, for mistakes, I guess. And there's going to be more and more events as they time.
There
it's
are
still scary though.
So many of us have reached the menopausal age still with the clutches of perfectionism grabbing all around us. And there is something very freeing. We're not burning our bras, let's say, but we're finally allowing ourselves to walk to the mailbox in our pajamas and not think that every neighbor is staring us down and making judgment. And honestly, you know, if I want to wear my unicorn slippers, I'm going to wear my unicorn slippers and it's okay.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah. So what would, if somebody wants to come and work with you and you know, what do they need to have kind of done before they can work with you?
I think the only big required step before working with me is the ability to pick up a phone or type an email or send a text message. And I don't need you to be past the fear, and I don't need you to be prepared to actually write anything. I just need you to, in a moment, it could even be, you know, a medicated moment.
Let me have some wine.
I had this big goal. I'm telling you, Michelle, I had this big goal. It was 3 years ago that I wanted to bring music back into my life. I was a trained classical flutist, and I had set that aside for a variety of reasons. And I wanted to do music again. And I saw this masterclass that was going to take place in Holland. And I was called. It was a vocation for me. I needed to be there. I needed to be at that live event. Oh, you may have some Mennonites here. They're called to attend your live event. And I said, okay, what am I going to do to get there? And, you know, I wasn't even going to sign up, wasn't going to sign up. And I went, and it was wonderful. It was everything. But the second year, I wasn't going to sign up. I psyched myself out. And then Thanksgiving, we may have had a bottle of wine at dinner. And then I may have baked a pumpkin pie. And as the pie was baking, I signed up for the second year, and it was the best thing I ever did. So getting past the fear is not necessary. Writing 15,000 words to prove concept is not necessary. I think it's just having the willingness to reach out, and then we'll take care of the rest of the details later. But in terms of what's going to get you through, for some of my writers, they've already got those journals that they can mine and archive. For other people, they really do have a manuscript lurking in a drawer somewhere. And for others, still the story's still taking shape. They're living that story and just need a little bit of help to get through it. I worked with, I had the pleasure of working this past summer with the mother of a boy that I went to school with all through grade school and high school. And she had written her family's history, only it was the family of her ancestors. Her children didn't even come into play in the time lapse of this book. And it was like meeting old new family. And, you know, she just wanted to know, is this something anyone else is going to be interested in? And to have that belief that, my family had a lot in common with your family. And, we did come from small towns in West Virginia. Yes, we had this bonding. Oh, there was this us versus them, the outsiders, everybody who, you might have lived in West Virginia, but if you were in another town in West Virginia, you were still an outsider. My grandmother never left the county in which she was born until she was 70 years old.
Wow.
We lived insular.
Yeah.
Everybody stayed close. And the first step is, it's going to vary. It's absolutely going to be different for each person along the way. And finding somebody to be with. It doesn't have to be me. It could be someone they met at the library or who sits in the coffee shop across from them, but is there the same days and times. It might just be that I'm going to commit to write every day that so-and-so's at the coffee house too. It could be a little wager that you place with yourself that says, if I see a rainbow this month, I'm going to write that book.
Well, you know, I mean, we could talk about manifestation for a second, you know, and if you want, if you want a sign, you can always ask the universe to give you a sign about whether or not you're going to write a book, and you can ask the universe to say, you know, if you really want me to write this book, then, you know, I want to see some foreign currency in the next 3 days. I mean, and you know what's funny is, you know, that kind of stuff happens. It really
I'm gonna
does.
Show up with a necklace that has a drachma on it.
See? Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. So you know, the law of attraction is a real thing. The law of vibration is a real thing. That we talked about that with Lindsay Durant when she was on the podcast a few weeks ago. And so, you know, these are really, really important things to think about. And I think, you know, as menopause happens, what we do is we start to really question everything, especially if your menopause is disruptive, then you start to question everything. And what's really great is to have a habit of, or a hobby, I'm saying, of, you know, photography or writing or something to be creative. And being creative, I think, is super important, as much as the schools don't care about it anymore.
Laws of vibration would have you practice, Michelle, saying, I am author, speaker, surgeon. You know, leave with those items that yeah. you're not sure you embrace, but because once you start living as if,
yeah,
that's when it comes true.
And it's true, because like when I really wanted to be in medicine, I was a doctor before I was a medical student. I was a surgeon before I was a resident. I mean, I would say I was these things. So I get it. That's exactly what I did.
You know, the wannabe writer may go ahead and go into their email and change the signature line to their name, comma, author of, and do a working title. Nothing like the outward telling the universe, I'm the author of this book, to make it happen. And then the first reply that says, when is your book out? Where can I get it? To make you want to finish it.
Yeah, well, I'm working on it. We'll say that. I'm working on it. So how can people get a hold of you?
I am at DEMI, DEMI, at YOTB Press, like Year of the Book, press.com. Yeah. And I'm sure that in the show notes, we'll add a link to the website as well. And I invite Absolutely. You can call me, text me, skywrite. And
we're going to skywrite right over your house.
Oh, very fun. Glen Rock, Pennsylvania.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share with the watchers, the viewers, the listeners about, you know, writing a book or anything at this point?
I would say to you in this moment, all of you listening, you are not the only one who can benefit from this next page of your life. Your story is bigger than you think it is. Your story is more profound. And your story is more fun. Embrace those light moments too, but don't be afraid of letting them out. Don't be afraid of making perceived errors along the way, because sometimes the fallout is more fun and just more where you were meant to be in that moment than the living the perfect way was going to be. But never for one moment doubt that you are not the person who was meant to be in the spotlight for a moment. Or for a long time. Your words have power. You've known this since the moment you could first cry and someone would respond to you with a bottle. You've known this, that other people's words have power, but oftentimes here in menopause, we've let other people's words take center stage. And now it's time to realize that ours can have that same impact, and it doesn't have to be in a negative way. That allow yourself to embrace what's beautiful, move toward it, move through whatever's holding you back, and picture that perfect ending. Picture the happy ending where you want to be. Put yourself in it, anchor it there, and make it real.
You can
reverse engineer the life you want.
You certainly can, that's for sure. Well, DEMI, thanks so much for being a part of the Menopause Movement podcast today. I really appreciate you.
It's so beautiful to see your transformation and to watch you take wings in this world. I love you so much.
Thanks so much. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Menopause Movement Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Gordon, and I wanted to take a moment to share what one of our community members has achieved since she's been working with me. Amanda has had an amazing transformation. Amanda was struggling with joint pain, hot flashes, forgetfulness, sleeplessness, weight gain, and an angry mood. In addition, she lost her confidence and self-worth as menopause crept up on her. Since joining the Menopause Movement membership, Amanda's quality of life has improved in ways no one could have predicted. She has truly transcended the symptoms of menopause and is now living her best life. This is what I want for everyone in the community. take a listen to Amanda's story. I just want to show you what's possible when you join the community and do the work. Transcendence is available for you, too. Now, here's Amanda.
Hi, my name is Amanda. I am 54 years old and I live in the UK. At this moment in time, I'm in a fairly good place in my life. Recently, I've lost 18 pounds and I feel healthier and more content than I have done in a long time. However, it hasn't always been this way. Back in October 2011, I had an accident which resulted in a serious injury and surgery and subsequently changed my life forever. And over the next few years during my recovery, menopause crept up on me, but I didn't realise what was happening straight away. I started suffering from more joint pain. I went from always being cold to feeling like I was going to internally combust several times a day. I was getting really forgetful. My sleep pattern was terrible. I piled the weight on and looked pregnant, and I felt angry all the time. When things were at their worst, I felt incredibly alone and very down. I lost my confidence and self-worth, and I felt completely misunderstood and confused about what was happening to me. I received very little support or information from my GP, and there was limited information on the internet, but what I really wanted and needed was someone to talk to. The turning point for me was at the beginning of July 2019, when completely by accident, I came across Dr. Michelle Gordon's Facebook page on the menopause movement. At that time, she was doing daily live streams and I started listening to them. I related to a lot of what she was saying and I was really interested in the variety of topics about menopause that she was talking about, the alternative ways to manage menopause symptoms in a more natural way, and how your mindset is the key factor to transforming your life more positively. I was also really interested to listen to the other ladies in the group and what they had to say. Ladies who had been or were still suffering from similar symptoms to me. How a lot of them had been able to manage their symptoms much better and how they have turned their lives around and embraced menopause instead of treating it like a demon. Although nervous about taking a risk to join a group I didn't know, I knew that I couldn't and didn't want to carry on living my life the way I was and feeling the way I was feeling. So I made a decision that I too wanted to learn more about menopause, how to manage my symptoms better, and most importantly, learn more about my mindset and the fact that I needed help with changing my outlook on life in order for me to get it back. Life is nowhere near perfect, and some days I still have my struggles, but on the whole, I can honestly say that I am in a much better place than I have been for a long time, and for my down days, I understand better how to manage them so they don't get out of hand. I am now on a journey with a fantastic community of like-minded women, all of whom continue to support each other no matter where we all live, and I no longer feel confused, misunderstood, worthless or alone. For me, this group has been both a lifesaver and a life changer, and most importantly, the one-to-one private coaching sessions that are available with Dr. Gordon as part of the membership have been invaluable to me. They provide me with an opportunity to discuss more difficult and private issues that I am struggling with, and an opportunity to find solutions to address them. Without doubt, I can wholeheartedly say that I owe Dr. Gordon and her group everything for showing me how to take my life back and, more importantly, take control of it. Joining her membership has been the best thing that I have ever done. However, this course is not for everyone. If you're looking for a quick fix that doesn't cost you any time, money or effort, then this is not the group for you. But if you're in a similar situation to how I was not that long ago, feeling desperate and at the end of your tether, but are willing to invest in your own future happiness and peace of mind, but are unsure as to what to do, ask questions and talk to Dr. Gordon. And if you choose to take that leap of faith, you won't regret it, because who wouldn't want to take their life back if they had the chance?
If you are feeling like Amanda, you're not alone. There is help for you in the Menopause Movement membership. I want to help you transcend your symptoms and live your best life. To discover how you can become a part of this life-changing community, go to menopausemovement.com.